Welcome to Yale Cancer Center Answers with your hosts, Drs. Francine Foss, Anish Chagpar, and Stephen Gore. Dr. Foss is a professor of medicine in the section of medical oncology at the Yale Cancer Center. Dr. Chagpar is associate professor of surgical oncology and director of the Breast Center at Smilo Cancer Hospital. And Dr. Gore is director of hematological malignancies at Smilo. Yale Cancer Center Answers features weekly conversations about the research, diagnosis, and treatment of cancer. And if you'd like to join the conversation, you can submit questions and comments to canceranswers@yale.edu, or you can leave a voicemail message at 888-234-4YCC. This week, you'll hear a conversation about melanoma with Dr. Dale Hahn and Amanda Ralibate. Dr. Hahn is assistant professor of surgery at the Yale School of Medicine, and Ms. Ralibate is a research nurse for the melanoma program at Smilo Cancer Hospital. Here's Dr. Chagpar.
Dale, why don't we start off, and then Amanda, you can join in as well. Tell us a little bit about yourself, what you do.
Well, I'm a surgeon here at Yale, and my specialty is in surgical oncology, and my life is fairly nomadic. I moved about 16 times before college, and I've lived in the Midwest, the Northeast, Atlantic Coast. And then I finally decided to lay roots at SUNY Stony Brook, where I did a medical program, both undergraduate and medical school there. I then went on to complete my surgical residency at the University of Pennsylvania, followed by a surgical oncology fellowship at the Moffitt Cancer Center in Tampa, Florida. And then I was very fortunate to be able to join the faculty up here as part of the section of surgical oncology.
And your focus is primarily on melanoma.
Yes, it is.
And Amanda, tell us about what you do.
So I am a clinical research nurse on the melanoma team. I started off my nursing career as an oncology inpatient nurse in Smilo and saw the opportunity to become a research nurse about a year and a half ago with the melanoma team. And I did that.
Okay. So we're here to talk about melanoma, both from, I guess, a clinical standpoint as well as a research standpoint, and maybe do a bit of education as well in terms of what exactly this disease is, how we can prevent it, how we can treat it, and what some of the cool advances are in melanoma. So Dale, why don't you start us off by telling us a bit about what exactly is melanoma?
So melanoma is one of the forms of skin cancers, and although it actually is not the most common, more common are basal cell carcinomas and squamous cell carcinomas. But although melanoma represents less than 5% of all skin cancers, it actually represents 80% of skin cancer-related deaths. So it's really the skin cancer that you have to treat appropriately and have to follow appropriately. Melanoma arises from specialized cells called melanocytes within all of our skin. And these cells produce a pigment called melanin. And the melanin is what gives us our skin tone and also is what we see as tanning. As we get darker, there's more melanin that gets produced. And the melanin helps absorb the radiation that we're exposed to on a daily basis from the sun or the environment. But when these melanocytes start accumulating damage to their DNA, they can start looking abnormal under the microscope and start proliferating out of control. And when that process starts to break through the skin barrier, that's when it gets called melanoma. So essentially, a lot of times, people will discover melanoma just by looking on their skin, seeing an abnormal lesion, a freckle, a mole, or something, a skin lesion that's changed in some way. It may have bled, it may have become itchy, and so forth. And then that brings it up to their attention. They have it evaluated, and a biopsy is often performed. And that's usually how melanoma gets diagnosed.
So, Amanda, when Dale was talking about these melanocytes and how they respond to sunlight and they cause pigment. I mean, what can we do to prevent melanoma? Is this the cancer that all of us hear about on the news that we're supposed to wear sunscreen for and we're supposed to avoid tanning salons? Like, how does that work?
Yes, so we recommend that patients and their family members stay out of the sun and stay away from excessive sun exposure and stay out of tanning beds and wear sunscreen while outside and cover up hats and long sleeves.
So, Dale, does that really work? I mean, Does sunscreen really work? And I mean, there are a lot of people, especially in the summertime, and as we're heading into fall, who like the, quote, healthy glow that they get after they've been to a tanning salon. So what's wrong with that?
As far as I'm concerned, there is no healthy glow. Well, absolutely. And it's all about being cognizant of skin protection. That's what it all comes down to. It doesn't mean that you live your life in a bubble in a dark cave somewhere, but it just means you have to be more cognizant of the fact that your skin, you have to try to minimize the exposure to your skin. And that involves sun protective clothing, long sleeves. There are plenty of companies out there that produce very fashionable clothing that are hats and long sleeve shirts and so forth. They're a lightweight, breathable material. So, these are things that we recommend to patients, just as simple measures. Also, as Amanda was mentioning about using suntan lotion, absolutely. Suntan lotion does help lower the exposure that your skin gets. And of course, just to add to what Amanda says, reapply every couple of hours after you've gone to the water and come out, reapply then. It's about being able to minimize the amount of sun exposure and UV radiation exposure that your sun or your skin is actually exposed to.
And so what about the tanning beds? I mean, there's been a lot in the media about tanning, particularly in youth. Laws coming out warning against particularly young people going to tanning salons. What's up with that?
Absolutely. And that's been a very controversial note. There is a push. The Society of Surgical Oncology at their last meeting had started to try to create a consensus statement about tanning salons and tanning beds. When you look at the Australian data, they showed that once they were able to make tanning beds illegal or that it wasn't allowed for up to a certain age group, the rate of actual incidence of melanoma actually went down in that age group. So there is data out there to suggest that there may be a causal link. But again, the data is still controversial in terms of how to interpret it and so forth. And certainly here in the United States, there seems to be a little bit more more people seem to be willing to go to these tanning salons and beds. And unfortunately, they're marketed and they're on every street corner. So kids seem to have ready access to a lot of these, especially college students.
So Amanda, how do you get the word out to people about, wear sunscreen, reapply more often, don't go to tanning salons? How do you get the word out about melanoma and ways of preventing it, aside from coming on shows like this and getting the word out this way?
I think we have to target the youth population, as you had mentioned. It seems that the youth population seems to want that summer glow, as you had mentioned. We also have a melanoma symposium coming up in September that will provide education and awareness regarding melanoma to patients, survivors, and those interested in learning more about the disease.
And so I think, when you mentioned this symposium, as I understand it, this is part of a nonprofit advocacy group called AIM, Aim at Melanoma, really targeting people from getting melanoma, wanting to get the word out to people about this disease. Dale, take us through a little bit more about how you go about making that diagnosis. So let's say somebody misses the symposium or catches it a little too late and says, gosh darn it, I stayed out in the sun, I didn't reapply my sunscreen, I visited the tanning salon, I didn't wear long sleeve clothes or hats or anything like that, and now I did find a freckle that is itchy and bleeding and scabby and so on. They go and they see their family doctor, who says, that looks strange. Is that when they come to see you?
Well, oftentimes patients, once they find a suspicious lesion or bring it to the attention of, let's say, their primary care physician, are oftentimes referred to a dermatologist initially. And oftentimes, the dermatologist then evaluates the lesion, takes a biopsy, and these biopsies can either be as a shave biopsy or a punch biopsy, which gives you a full thickness of the skin in that area. And then a diagnosis is made based on the pathology on that biopsy. Sometimes patients are directly referred over to a surgeon or a surgical oncologist. And oftentimes, if it's a suspicious lesion, it's oftentimes best just to go ahead and biopsy it, because aside from the ABCDs and E's that everyone has been told about, you know, one of the big things is, what is the patient's feeling? Is it something that's changed? You know, a patient is the best person in terms of a gauge of a change in their body. So if it is suspicious enough to the patient, oftentimes it warrants having a biopsy done. So when we take the biopsy and the diagnosis comes back to melanoma, that's when we go ahead and start initiating discussions about prognosis, treatment, and so forth.
So I want to take a step back for just a minute. You said, you know, aside from the ABCDEs that everyone learns mm-hmm. about, for many people, our listening audience, they may know exactly what you were talking about. For other people, they may think that those are just the first five letters of the alphabet. Mm-hmm. So let's take a step back, and maybe we can go through what exactly you meant by the ABCDEs.
Okay, so you're going to look at for asymmetry in the pigmented lesion, changes in the borders, the color, the diameter of the lesion, and essentially, you know, the last part, I'm actually going to make it as an F. It's called feeling, what the patient feels about the lesion itself. Has it changed? And if it has and the patient's really concerned about it, then go ahead and it warrants the biopsy in itself. But these are some of the things that we look at, especially the dermatologist when they go through and take a look.
So, Amanda, you know, you've been a nurse prior to being a research nurse. When people come in and they've had this biopsy done and they're told that this is melanoma, do a lot of patients, A, know what that means, and B, what sense of fear and anxiety do they have with that diagnosis?
Well, Dr. Hahn can probably speak better to newly diagnosed melanoma patients. I primarily deal with those who are newly diagnosed metastatic melanoma patients.
What does that mean? So give us a sense of what is a metastatic patient?
So a metastatic melanoma patient is when somebody's melanoma has metastasized to another organ. So, for example, the lungs or the liver.
And does that happen very often?
Yes.
Yeah. And so that must be pretty devastating when people have melanoma that's now spread. Yeah. So Dale, do they get that sense of dread when they're newly diagnosed, or are they like, you know what, it's a freckle, it's diagnosed with melanoma, that's fine, it's a freckle?
Well, you see a wide spectrum of patients, and certainly the vast majority of them come in very, very concerned, with, you know, rightly so. When you hear a diagnosis of cancer, as a person, it's the unknown. It's all you hear about are the worst case stories and scenarios. But, you know, some patients come in not really, really concerned about it, but oftentimes those patients don't really understand their diagnosis. So you see a wide spectrum. But certainly, you know, when most patients hear that diagnosis of skin cancer, melanoma, most patients are usually very, very concerned and obviously want to know about prognosis and treatment and so forth.
And we're going to talk more about prognosis and treatment of melanoma right after we take a break for a medical minute. So please stay tuned to learn more information about melanoma with my guests, Dr. Dale Hahn and Amanda Rallabate.
There are over 13 million cancer survivors in the United States and over 100,000 here in Connecticut. Completing treatment for cancer is an exciting milestone, but cancer and its treatment can be a life-changing experience. Following treatment, cancer survivors can face several long-term side effects of cancer, including heart problems, osteoporosis, fertility issues, and an increased risk of second cancers. Resources for cancer survivors are available at federally designated comprehensive cancer centers to keep cancer survivors well and focused on healthy living. The Survivorship Clinic at Yale Cancer Center focuses on providing guidance and direction to empower survivors to take steps to maximize their health, quality of life, and longevity. This has been a Medical Minute, brought to you as a public service by Yale Cancer Center and Smilo Cancer Hospital at Yale New Haven. More information is available at yalecancercenter.org. You're listening to WNPR, Connecticut's public media source for news and ideas.
Welcome back to Yale Cancer Center Answers. This is Dr. Anise Chagpar, and I'm joined today by my guests, Dr. Dale Hahn and Amanda Ralibate. We're talking about melanoma, and right before the break, Dale, you were talking about how there's really a spectrum of people's emotional reactions to getting a diagnosis of melanoma. But I think that for many people, very much as you said at the beginning of the show, this is not the classic basal cell cancer, which is really pretty indolent. Most people know that melanoma is one of those really aggressive cancers. And as Amanda, you were talking about, it's the kind that can spread to other organs and certainly can carry a prognosis that is not so favorable. So Dale, take us through what happens after the diagnosis of melanoma. The dermatologist has done a biopsy. It comes back as melanoma. They come to see you. Is this like, okay, that's it, write your will? Or are there really good treatment options available for these patients?
Absolutely. There are very good treatment options for patients. And the big thing is when most patients who come in with the diagnosis of melanoma, the vast majority of them have what we call local disease. So they don't come in with disease that has spread to their lymph nodes or anywhere else in their body. About 70% of patients actually present with thin melanomas, which are less than or equal to 1 millimeter in thickness. And what we do look for in the pathology of the biopsy is how deep has that melanoma gone. We define thin lesions as less than or equal to 1 millimeter, which is what the vast majority of patients present with. So for these patients and for patients with local disease, treatment options are excellent. And many of these patients can actually be cured of their cancer. The standard recommendation for local disease is to do a wide local excision, which consists of excising the former biopsy cavity or the lesion site with a margin of what appears to be normal skin. And that's in order to make sure that we get out all that melanoma and to be able to decrease your recurrence rate at that local site to about 1% to 2%. The real question then is about further staging procedures. And one of the biggest ones is something called sentinel lymph node biopsy, where we try to detect if there is any microscopic spread of melanoma to the draining lymph node basins. Now, as I mentioned, most patients don't present with clinically or palpable or lymph nodes that you can feel as enlarged. So really, it's about trying to detect this microscopic spread. And we use radio tracers and blue dye to find the sentinel node, excise that node, and then the pathologist can take a look for any microscopic disease in that node. So really, as a staging procedure, that will determine quite a bit. But for patients who present with just the localized disease and you've done the wide local excision, and particularly for thin melanoma patients, survival for 10 years can be over 90%.
Wow. So that's really terrific. Do patients then need chemotherapy or radiation, or are they done, cured? Live long and prosper.
That's a very complicated question. I'm glad you asked that. For patients with just local disease and no evidence of spread to the lymph nodes, surgical excision is all they'll need. For patients who have been found to have spread to the lymph nodes, the standard recommendation is then to go back in and, one, surgically remove the rest of those lymph nodes in that basin as in a procedure that we call a completion lymph node dissection, because when you take all comers, about 15 to 20% of patients will have an additional node with metastatic melanoma. So we want to clear that entire lymph node basin of any disease. After that point, then the patient gets referred to a medical oncologist. We have excellent medical oncologists here in the melanoma unit who have had inordinate experience in treating patients with metastatic melanoma. And what they do is essentially have a discussion with patients who have evidence of spread to the lymph nodes in terms of either being treated with interferon or being placed on a clinical trial or just being under surveillance at that point. The situation is obviously a little bit different, as Amanda was saying, for patients who develop distant metastatic disease. These patients are primarily treated with systemic therapies. And since 2011, it's been a real turning point because there's so many new powerful therapies that are either have been developed or in the pipeline at this point, either as immunotherapies or targeted therapies. And they've really opened the gateway in terms of developing further agents for the treatment of metastatic melanoma.
So, Amanda, this is where you come in, right? When Dale talks about these powerful, novel therapies that are in development or in the pipeline, we're really talking about clinical trials. And I think that a lot of tremendous work has been done in melanoma. So as a research nurse, you talk to patients about clinical trials, right, for melanoma. How do people respond when you talk to them about clinical trials? Are they like, woohoo, sign me up. I'd love to be part of a clinical trial and help to move therapies forward and potentially get tomorrow's treatment today? Or is there some trepidation on the part of patients?
I would say there's a little bit of both. I think that immunotherapies have been the hot topic in melanoma for the last several years. And so patients are usually pretty excited to have these opportunities and, you know, this option to receive an immunotherapy through a clinical trial. But again, there's always, you know, there's always some hesitation on their part because these clinical trials can be time consuming. There can be side effects. So I would say both.
Yeah. Dale, can you talk a little bit about some of these novel targeted therapies and immunotherapies? What exactly are they? I mean, I know that certainly the immunotherapies have been taking the world by storm, and there have been some very big publications in the New England Journal of Medicine and others, particularly geared around immunotherapy in melanoma, that actually came out of Yale.
Absolutely. So 2011 marked a turning point in the treatment for metastatic melanoma. Prior to that point, therapies for patients with metastatic disease was fairly limited. You had chemotherapy, but response rates are only in the order of about 10 to 15%. You had biochemotherapy, which is a combination of the immunotherapies we had back then, high-dose IL-2, interferon, along with chemotherapy, but and then vaccine therapies and adoptive cell therapy. But in 2011, two lines of therapies came out, and one was called vemurafenib, and that's a targeted therapy against BRAF mutant melanoma. BRAF is a gene where they found that it was a driver mutation that essentially drove the progression of melanoma, so that if you inhibited it, you could actually cause lesions to regress. The other line of therapy was called is immunotherapy, was ipilimumab. And again, as we were mentioning, a lot of work has been done in immunotherapies. In this particular therapy, they showed that about 10 to 15% of patients, or approximately 10% of patients, will develop a complete response, which was pretty much unheard of for a while. And there was significant improvements in survival. So in 1 year, you suddenly went from very limited options to two very good options potentially for the treatment of metastatic melanoma. But more importantly, what ipilimumab did was it opened the gateway for developing further therapies treating melanoma through immunotherapy. One of the biggest ones is anti-PD-1 therapy, and that is being extensively studied here at Yale. And will also be discussed at the Melanoma Patient Symposium also. And a lot of research is going into that. And really now the big clinical questions on top of developing these therapies is trying to find combinations of these therapies and then incorporating multimodality therapies such as surgery into the treatment algorithm of patients with metastatic melanoma. It's a really exciting time now and a lot of clinical questions to answer.
So tell us a little bit more about the anti-PD-1. I mean, when we first heard about it, it was kind of like helping your immune system to overcome the cloaking of cancers.
Absolutely. So essentially, PD-1 is is a receptor on monocles that on white on lymphocytes that essentially is a marker for exhausted T cells. So that if you can inhibit that, you can basically upregulate these T cells to then become more active, and then therefore with more active white cells, you may be able to then start fighting the melanoma cells or the metastatic melanoma cells and tumor cells that are around.
That is incredible. So have people looked at combining these therapies, using some targeted chemotherapies along with immunotherapies, along with other types of therapies?
Absolutely. There's an ongoing trial that's looking at both ipilimumab with anti-PD-1 therapy. This is a little bit out of my scope in that, I know the medical oncologists here, Dr. Kluger and Dr. Schnall, would certainly know more about it. But certainly the big thing is looking at combination of therapies, whether it's targeted therapy or immunotherapy or different combinations of immunotherapies together. One of the things that would be interesting to look at is to see if you can use these agents in a neoadjuvant setting, meaning treatment of patients with advanced disease that are borderline resectable, and seeing whether or not a patient will have a good enough response to then be able to go on to surgery. Other ways to look at it are that patients with metastatic disease who are treated with these agents are so powerful that they can stabilize disease for a long period of time, or patients can have a significant response, and then patients may be surgical candidates to remove any residual metastatic lesions. And certainly, more and more patients are getting referred for evaluation for that. And I think it's a very exciting time, but again, a lot of clinical questions to answer, and it's still very early.
Do you think that there will ever come a time when surgery won't be needed, that people could do a biopsy of a cancer and say, aha, we know that this particular melanoma is fed by this gene and that gene, and if I turn on this switch or that switch of your immune system, we can eradicate this melanoma and you'll never need surgery again?
Selfishly, I hope not, because that means I'm out of a job. But certainly that would be the wave of the future, and gene expression profiling and targeting those mutations that could drive cancer is certainly the ultimate goal. And I certainly hope that we someday reach that point, hopefully not too soon though.
Yeah. Yeah. He's like, I got a few years left on my career here. We've talked a little bit about surgery. We've talked a little bit about chemotherapy, targeted therapies, immunotherapies. We haven't talked a lot about radiation. Does radiation play a role in melanoma?
It does. Melanoma cells are generally not very radiosensitive, meaning they aren't affected by radiation as much as other cancer cell types may be. But we do use radiation oftentimes in a palliative sense. For instance, patients may have lesions to their spine or to their brain, and will use radiation to try to control these lesions, especially if patients are having pain, for instance, in their spine, or if they're having multiple lesions in their brain and so forth. Other places we may use radiation are in the regional draining nodal basins. The Australians have published studies giving criteria for use for adjuvant, meaning after surgery use of radiation. I think a lot of us would favor not doing that, simply because if a patient did recur, using radiation could complicate any subsequent surgeries. But certainly there is a potential role there.
So what if, Amanda, if there was one message that you wanted to give to patients? You see patients kind of when their disease is already metastasized. What would that one message be? If you were going to give everyone who's listening to us tonight one message in our last minute, what would you tell them?
I would tell patients to, stay out of the sun or use the correct protective sunscreen. And if they notice, changes in moles or freckles or, changes on their skin, to see a dermatologist and seek help.
Amanda Ralibate is a research nurse for the melanoma program at Smilow Cancer Hospital, and Dr. Dale Hahn is assistant professor of surgery at the Yale School of Medicine. We invite you to share your questions and comments. You can send them to canceranswers@yale.edu, or you can leave a voicemail message at 888-234-4YCC. And as an additional resource, archived programs are available in both audio and written form at yalecancercenter.org. We'd like to thank the Yale Cancer Center for providing production support for this program, and we'd also like to thank Renee Gaudette, Emily Fenton, and the staff of the Yale Broadcast and Media Center. I'm Bruce Barber, hoping you'll join us again next Sunday evening at 6 for another edition of Yale Cancer Center Answers here on WNPR, Connecticut's public media source for news and ideas.